Could you give me the sorry, could you give me the exact paragraph number?
Yeah, 93.7.
Seven, okay. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Seeing how the Supreme has his arms and legs everywhere, all pervading body, even though his personal body has a certain size, but he's at the same time all pervading, same body, not different bodies. Continuing. Tasma Sri Bhagavan Yatokta Lakshana Eva. Sa Eva Vadanti Ityasya Mukhyartha Bhutam Mulam Tattvam. Iti Pariyavasanam. It is concluded, therefore, that the personality of Godhead is just as described. The primary referent of the statement beginning Vedanti. Referent. I think I spelled it wrong too. It's the thing that the statement refers to. Vedanti tat tatvamidas, tatvam. The tatvam that's talked about in that verse is the personality of Godhead. Even though he has three names, Brahma, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, it's Bhagavan that we're talking about. Taruktam Moksha Dharme Sri Narayani Yopakyane Tatvam Gigasamananam Hetubik Sarvato Mukaihi Tatvameko Mahayogi Harir Narayana Prabhu Iti. This is also stated in the Narayaniya section, the Narayaniya narration of the Moksha Dharma, which says, Lord Hari is the truth. Serious inquirers investigate with all varieties of comprehensive logic. He alone, the greatest of mystics, Lord Narayan, is this truth. Okay? Anyway, that's just affirming the supreme truth is Lord Hari and Narayan. They're the same. Basic fact, we're just reiterating it with corroboration of various scriptures. Narayani Upanishadicha, Narayana Param Brahma Tattvam Narayana Param Iti. It is also said in the Narayana Upanishad,
Narayan is the supreme Brahman, and Narayan is the supreme truth. Ata Sri Ramanuj Odarita, Ramanuja Odarita Shrutayas Cha. And thus we also have, Sri Ramanuja has also thus cited many passages of Shruti in this regard, such as the one that begins as follows. Yasya prithivi shariram ityarabhya, esha sarva bhutam taratma, divyo deva eko narayanam ityadya bahuyaha. Well, this passage begins, who has the earth as his body? And then it goes on to say, he is the indwelling soul of all beings, the one divine Lord Narayana. Iha Shri Bhagavanam Shabhutana Purushadinam Paramatattva Vigrahata Sadhanam Vakyajatamapi Tasyam Shinas Tadrupa Vigrahatvam Kaimujinami Vyarunatiti Purvatrachotaratra Chakrante Tatodadanani. In this same regard, there are many statements demonstrating that the Purusha and other plenary expansions from the personality of Godhead have personal forms which are all the supreme truth. Not only Narayan, but the Purushas and other plenary expansions, they're all identified with the supreme truth. And those, their personal forms, their personal bodies are identified with the supreme truth. These statements imply by the reasoning of what to speak of, that the personal form of him who is the origin of all these expansions is also such. His body, the one from whom all these Vishnu tattvas come, he must have a body that's identical with the Absolute Truth. Statements of this kind have already been cited in this book, and more will be cited later on. Okay. You want to know where has it been cited before that different forms of God have bodies that are identical with the Absolute Truth? Where has this already been said? And where will this be said later on? Second paragraph of the commentary. I give some information. Commentary. The verse Vedanti Tat Tattva Vidha talks about three aspects of the same one absolute truth. Among the three, however, there is a difference. A few corrections here. Okay, I'm correcting. Bhagavan is the ultimate reality. The Brihadaranyaka Upanishad depicts the immortal supreme soul as the indwelling controller of all the elements of creation. Yam prithivya tishtam prithivya antaro yam prithivi naveda yasya prithivi shariram yam prithivi antaro yamayati Eshata Atmantara Yami Amritaha, he who stands in the earth and pervades her, whom the earth does not know, and who has the earth as his body, controlling her from within, he is the immortal, indwelling regulator. Okay, well, that's identifying the Supreme Soul as the Paramatma. This is talking about the Paramatma. Another revealed text, the Subala Upanishad, modifies this presentation slightly, replacing the term Antaratma Yami with the name Narayan. So it's an identification of the Paramatma, but one Upanishad takes the same words and substitutes Narayan for Antaryami. In other words, Bhagavan is the ultimate truth, and he's also the Paramatma. Paramatma is not different from him. Then it has been stated with examples more than once in this Sandarbha that the personality of Godheads partially revealed self-same expansions, his amshas, are each also the supreme truth in full. Not just some percentage, but 100%, they're the supreme truth. Even though they're said to be his partial expansions. Where is this? In text 28, Anuchet 28, Mahavishnu, Lord Mahavishnu, as he appears after the annihilation of the whole creation, was shown to be such. And in text 29, Anuchet 29, the same was said of Mahavishnu's expansion, Sesha Sankarsana, who lies at the bottom of the universe, holding the planetary system of the earth on one of his serpent hoods like a single mustard seed, and waiting for the time when he will initiate the final destruction of the universe. Later on in the Sandarbha, other similar examples will be shown of the swamshas of the personality of Godhead, who are all the supreme truth in full. That's later on in the Sandarbha, it's not just this Sandarbha. In texts 2-5 of the Paramatma Sandarbha, the transcendental status of the three Purusha incarnations will be affirmed. And in text 12 of the Paramatma Sandarbha, Lord Vishnu among the Guna avatars will be said to be superior to Brahma and Shiva, even though he also rules a mode of material nature. Okay. You can see that pasta makes for a sleepy first class. Everyone's a little... Everyone missed the pasta. 93.8. Oh no, any questions first? Yeah. Subala Upanishad? It's one of the 108. It's not one of the 11 primary Vedanta Upanishads, but it is quoted by Ramanujacharya. So he quotes about 30 Upanishads in his books. So it's among the 30 important Upanishads. I don't remember what's in there. The Subala Upanishad. It's not very long. And even Prabhupada has some quotes from it. Yes.
The one non-dual substance, the absolute truth, is one. It's Bhagavan, Paramatma, Bhagavan. Same Bhagavan is Paramatma, Bhagavan, and Brahman, interchangeable. Is it the right understanding or the. The knows the absolute truth, they distinguish. Some knows the absolute truth, they call him as Bhagavan, some call him as Brahman, some call him as Paramatma. Those absolute truth is one, but one will.
Well, no, we've already been discussing that there is some distinction in function. When Bhagavan is just sitting in the heart, not doing anything but witnessing, then he's functioning as Paramatma. It is a different function. It's not his favorite pastime to just sit around and do nothing. But he does it to help the living entity. So that's a special function, so it gets a special name. It is different in that way. And when he pretends to be impersonal, then he's Brahman. That's also some special function. Well, this is a long passage, and the earth is only one of the bodies that's mentioned. It said that this is his body and that's his body. Every single element you can think of, it said that it's his body. So obviously, the idea is that everything is his body. Everything is part of his body. This is the cosmic body of the Lord that includes everything, all of his energies, material and spiritual. It's his body in a special sense, in a broader sense, that he's fully conscious of it, controlling it, and identifies with it. That's the basic meaning of soul and body. It's not just, you know, the specific idea we have of soul and body. We think of bodies like this, you know, made of carbon, you know, carbon, oxygen, and other elements. And then soul is the individual jiva inside it. But the definition could be broadened to include the relationship between God and all his energies. All his energies together make his body in a different sense, in a broader sense. And that's what the Upanishad is talking about. Ramanuja didn't make up this concept. It comes from that Upanishad, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, other Upanishads.
And also the analogy of two birds, both of one of them is a kaya.
Yes.
Two birds are sitting in the same tree.
Yes.
One bird is an individual soul which has this body. At the same time, you have a super soul which is also sitting in the same branch.
Yes.
Does it mean that our body is also a super soul's body?
No, better to think of him as a guest. We're the proprietor. The body was created for us because we wanted it. Supersoul didn't want it, so you can't ascribe it that he's responsible for the body or that it's his body. He just happens to be there. He's there in all the bodies, so he doesn't identify with any particular material body. He accompanies every jiva in every material body. He's just a guest. So he's the soul. Everybody has two souls. So there's a soul who identifies with it, and that's because it's a material body, it's a false identification if it's a material body. And then material bodies also have a second soul, the super soul. Every material body does. But better to say that it's the body of the jiva soul. And then you could formulate another conception, and you do find in the Upanishads that all those bodies make up at least part of the body of the super soul. There's a cosmic total body. Therefore, we talk in terms of Vyashti or Samashti. So if we're talking about the Samashti body, that's all the bodies. One Ji soul has all these different bodies. Yes?
Shri Krishna. You know, you said that he who stands in the earth.
Yes. Well, Tishna. Tishna. Prithivyam Tishna.
Well,
this is not to be taken literally. First of all, it's a sort of abstract description. It's not any particular form of the Lord. It's not him with four arms or eight arms. It's not describing any personal vigraha. We're talking in general about the super soul. He's standing on the earth. That can be understood as a philosophical way of describing he's pervading the earth. Okay, he's there, he's present everywhere. And so he's inside the earth. It doesn't mean that he's in a particular body, standing on the earth or embedded in the earth, you know, stuck in the earth somewhere. No. It's sort of a disembodied, pervading. As the super soul does. He's present everywhere by his consciousness. The super soul is aware of everything. So he's in there with his consciousness, not necessarily in a bodily form.
One question is that who has the earth as his body?
Yeah.
So how can it possible?
How can a person have the earth as his form?
Yeah, because earth is made of material things, no? So I don't know.
Well, in this world we have lots of bodies that are material. That it's material doesn't disqualify it from it being a body. In fact, we only know about material bodies in this world. We don't know about spiritual bodies. The problem is not that it's material. The problem is that what confuses us is it doesn't have a form. It's just, you know, all the earth atoms in the world. How's that body? It's all scattered around. It's just a bunch of atoms everywhere, right? So, but it is. When the universe was created, from the Mahatattva came the 10 elements. And each of the elements had a deity, a demigod. What does it mean, a super soul? Each of them was taken over by a demigod, who became the Jiva, who had the whole element, whatever it is, earth, water, fire, each of them had their own demigod. The fire god has all the fire in the universe as his body. And then the super soul is also there. Since that's a material body. But it's a strange material body. It's scattered all over the universe. It's just a collection of, you know, of fire atoms all over the world, all over the universe. But the demigod of fire, that's his first body. That's his cosmic body. And if there's a material body, it's material, it's a body, then the super soul is also there. So the super soul is standing in the fire as the super soul, as the Paramatma accompanying the fire god, who's predominating over all the fire in the world.
Can we say like a person who's driving a Mercedes Benz, his body, he has his own body, like two hands and legs, but as long as the car is expanded, he is identified with that if anything goes wrong to it.
Yeah.
As much as the car is, he also identifies that car as his, like if any scratch happened to the car, he's feeling something.
But that's unusual, you know.
So is it similar to
that? I mean, a living entity is carrying around a material body and he identifies with it.
Yeah.
But identifying with your car is not on the same level. If you really think that the car is your body, then you're crazy.
Yeah.
You know, it's not normal for someone to think. He thinks the car is his, and if the car gets smashed, it's a great loss to him.
Yeah.
But a normal person doesn't think that the car is his body. There's some difference there.
So the demigod has his own body.
Well,
so
yeah.
The,
all
the fire can power all the...
Well, yes.
The fire, if there is a fire, how the Agni demigod will not be identified. That has the same body as his body also?
No, it's a different body. A demigod will have more than one body. He'll have a cosmic body, a samashti body, and he'll also have his own individual, you know, forearmed or whatever armed demigod body that lives in Swargaloka, has a, you know, an apartment, a flat somewhere in Swargaloka, you know, a particular body and a particular home. That's his personal body.
Yeah.
But he's also got an official, you know, a cosmic body that's all the fire in the world is another body of his.
See.
And then demigods can assume various bodies. Earth can become a cow. They can have multiple bodies. They have that power.
So one of the primary bodies is their own body.
Okay. Yeah, I guess you could say that. I'm not sure which one is the first and primary body. The pile of all the atoms, or the one who looks, you know, with the helmet and four arms, I don't know.
Can I ask one more question?
Yes.
In your commentary, you mentioned a lot of quotations from the other Sandarbhas. You did some research to find them,
How did I do it?
Huh? Yeah.
I don't remember. This happened about a year ago that I compiled that commentary. One procedure is that I have a table of contents. The whole six Sandarbhas that I put together. I actually stole a lot of it from Haridas Shastri. He has an elaborate table of contents. So I copied that table of contents and I refer to sometimes to try to identify anuchets and to deal with special topics. The other procedure is more tedious. I actually go through the anuchets and meet them to find, you know, where it's topics. Because sometimes it's just said, this is said elsewhere or later on or before. And I got to try to find it. It sometimes takes several hours to find it. But first thing I do is look at the table of contents and see if that gives me the answer. Yeah.
I understood that the Puranas, they are in three modes, so therefore the different pastimes will be described from different angles. But here we see that the absolute truth is sometimes described as absolute truth and sometimes as Narayana. Now, Upanishads are supposed to be transcendental. Why do they change descriptions of the absolute? Why did this take as Narayana, this absolute truth?
Yeah, Upanishads are supposed to be transcendental. That means they shouldn't be in the material modes. Well, Puranas are not really in the modes. They're written for people in the modes. They're spoken all by the same authority, Suta Goswami. So it's not like Suta Goswami was in Maya one day and he spoke Tamasic Puranas. You know, it's not any fault of the author. So the books are all authoritative. It's just that some of them are meant to appeal to people in the mode of ignorance. That's the Puranas. They're also transcendental, the Puranas. It's just that they are written for... A lot of them are written for materialistic people. Upanishads are transcendental, but also they sometimes appeal to somewhat materialistic consciousness. They appeal to, very often, to a personal understanding, and sometimes they appeal to ritualistic understanding. The Upanishads are coming from the Vedas. They're connected to the Aranyakas. In the Aranyakas, there are esoteric philosophical discussions mixed in with ritual interpretations. So there's a lot of ritualistic material that's not at all philosophical, still in the Aranyakas, and some of that spills over into the Upanishads. Parts of some of the big Upanishads are just talking about ritualistic things. Some parts. So there's an overlapping of the ritualism and the philosophy, and in the philosophy, a lot of it sounds impersonal. Or there are some Upanishads that seem to promote certain even demigods. There are Durga Upanishads, there are Shaiva Upanishads, and then there are Upanishads that promote Narayan, and other ones that promote Nrisingadeva or Gopal. And there are different Upanishads that present different deities, and some of them are just demigods. And then there are personal Upanishads that are just practically Mayavad, at least sound like it. Or Yoga Upanishads that teach meditation, different Upanishads. But don't think that it means that some of them are pure Upanishads and the other ones are materialistic. They're all transcendental, the same way as all the Puranas are transcendental. But they're written to appeal to different audiences.
I can't get a grasp on the concepts given as often. The Kalika describing how to do a human sacrifice. How would that be transcendental?
Well, that you don't find in the Upanishads. That's just in the Brahmanas. You know, that doesn't get into the Upanishads for human sacrifice.
Well, how you say Puranas are also transcendental? How is that transcendental?
You mean the description in the Puranas?
Yeah.
Of human sacrifice. How to do one?
Okay.
There's some really materialistic topics you can find in Skanda Purana and other places.
You bring an idea about some really weird things.
I don't know. I don't know how to explain the spiritual connection between these topics. But there is transcendental authority in the Upanishads. It's the authority of the speaker, and he got what he learned from Vyasadeva and other sages, the authority of those sages from whom the Upanishadic knowledge and Puranic knowledge is obtained. And the Puranas originally are eternal scripture. Although we call them Smriti, actually the Puranas are eternal also. So there's that authority. It may not be easy to understand how such mundane descriptions have anything spiritual to do about them. But they're part of the whole picture. Puranas are supposed to be encyclopedic. They're supposed to tell something about everything, including, the really mundane things that are only of interest to really mundane people. But an encyclopedia should say something about it. Maybe not all the details, you know, about how to kill somebody or how to perform a human sacrifice. But something is there in the Upanishads. It's just the nature of the all-encompassing encyclopedic, you know, job of the Upanishads to present a whole picture of existence, of creation. But still they're spiritual. The strategy seems to be we want to attract everybody to study these Puranas. So even people who are deeply in the mode of ignorance are attracted by such topics. You know, people who are very materialistic, very much in the mode of ignorance, will want to read parts of the Skanda Purana to get the information they want, or the encouragement to do their tamasic puja. They'll find it in the Skanda Purana or Linga Purana. And that will attract them to the authority, that will get them to accept the authority of the Puranas, which is the beginning of their spiritual life.
Regarding this point we were discussing, how one person has two bodies, this question is directly posed in these Kali calculations in which the discussion of rivers is described.
Of what?
A river having two bodies, water body and the one most what I find very clear in that description in the Purana was that you have these snails, you have two bodies, a soft one and this body carrying on the back.
Yeah.
So in this way you have this external body and a soft and internal body.
Yes.
And it has multiple bodies in it. I mean, because the question was posed to me.
Okay, thank you. Yes. Okay, save it. Yes, Tata Govinda.
Well, we normally use the term identify to describe two things that have similar features, things that are eternally separate or separated. But I don't understand how is the body of the avatars identified with the body of the Supreme Lord Krishna, because we know that the body of Krishna is one, or Krishna is one.
Yes. The body of Krishna is one? What is that?
Yeah, Krishna is one. If he is one,
what is that one Krishna? Is it just this little boy over there sitting on the rock with the flute, and everything else on the other side is not him? But the problem is, it's not only that little boy, it's everything else also, that's Krishna. So all the bodies of the demigod are included in Krishna. That's what Lord Brahma saw, that the cowherd boys turned into Vishnus, and all the demigods were there too, all included in Krishna's body.
The point I'm trying to make is, let's take for example, we have two tables that are similar.
I'm sorry, two?
Two tables. Let's take for example two tables that are similar, and at the same time we take Krishna or maybe one of his avatars, Lord Ram. Who will say that though Krishna and his avatar are one, they are the same? Because they are eternally one.
Well, okay,
and
but
the two tables are similar, but they are not.
Similar is not the same as identical. If I'm looking at a table, okay, and it has a broken corner. You don't see that corner because you're looking from the other side. You say, no, it doesn't have a broken corner. You think you're looking at a different table. That's a mistake. That table, your table and my table are identical because it's the same one table. But if you have two different tables that look the same, that's still two different tables. It's not identical, it's similar. Identical means it's only one thing. So, but there is a sense in which everything is identical with Krishna. And there's another sense in which everything isn't identical with Krishna. That's the mystery. But identical is not the same, is different, is not the same idea as similar. But there is identity. Krishna is one. There is nothing other than Krishna. And then there's also so many other things beside Krishna. It's one and the same, so one and difference. same and different simultaneously.
Okay, what does it mean that they have body that I can have with Krishna?
Who does?
The avatar. Maybe you mentioned something in here. I think it was.
Do I say that the bodies are identical to Krishna, or the bodies are identical to Krishna's body? We have to look at the statement.
Is there something
Earth is identified with
Krishna's body? No, we say the word identical is not used here. The statement in the Upanishad is the earth is his body. It's one of his bodies. That same passage, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 3.7, that chapter has a number of sentences that say that the water is his body, the fire is his body, the ether is his body. It lists about 20 different bodies. So when it says the earth is his body, it's only one on a big list. It's one of his bodies. And it doesn't use the word identical or even similar. It just says the earth is his body. It's one of his bodies.
Okay,
I'll find it. I don't want to ask you a question. We have two statements that it is affirms the holy name if we think the Vedic scriptures are scriptures in Persian, so Vedic versions are that offense. And second is, you say that Purana is also a transcendental platform, Upanishads also, undoubtedly.
Yes.
But how can I understand when like Narada Muni chastised Vyasadeva, that why is some theory come, you know, these things were like, you know, useless or something like that. So,
yes. Does I think that's from a special transcendental point of view. That he doesn't say Naishkarmya is useless. He says Naishkarmya is useless if it's Achyuta Bhava Varjita. In personal, you know, cessation of work is useless if there's no Krishna Katha, no Krishna consciousness. And what to speak of karma, totally useless. It's worse than useless if there's no Krishna consciousness. But if you add the Krishna consciousness, then the karma and the jnana become useful for some people. But the Krishna consciousness has to be there. Once Vyasadeva follows his guru's order and adds the Bhavatam, then all the Vedic literatures are perfect. Then the karma kanda, the jnana kanda have their place because the bhakti kanda has been established. But without the bhakti kanda, it's like a house without a roof. The rain will get in. But if you complete the structure by producing the bhavatam, then karma and jnana kandas can serve their proper purpose usefully. I think that's what he's getting at, what Vinod is telling us. Because he doesn't say Naishkarmya is useless. He says it's useless if it's Achyuta Bhava Varjita.
I still have this section of all doubts, which nobody has clarified.
Yes.
Krishna's form, the external universal form, is the same as Krishna. Then,
which form is the same?
Earth, fire, universal form,
the universal, the bodily, yeah, the physical, material form. The universal body, yeah.
It's also Krishna.
Only in the sense that material energy is also Krishna. It's his energy. Krishna's energy is Krishna, but in another way it's not Krishna. Shakti, Shakti, Matur, Abheda. There's not difference between the energy and the possessor of the energy, but there also is a difference on the other hand. So, if you could grasp, you know, that in some way, the material energy is Krishna. In that same way, the whole universe, the whole total of material energy can be seen as a body and it can be seen as Krishna, but only in the same way that material energy, his inferior energy, is also him. it's him and it's not him. It's really his. But there's an element of non-difference.
I think I'm doing this point because we suppose if they are one, then we discuss the other one is different. The one would mean that fire would just react as Krishna would react if you approach him with a prayer.
The fire?
Yeah, because if fire is identical to Krishna, or earth is the same as Krishna, then you suppose that if I do a prayer to fire or to earth,
But then you're carrying the identity too far. It's not that identical. That fire, it's not that the matter will always act like Krishna. If it did, then I could worship, mud. I could just worship the earth. Or whatever element I like, I can worship it. Forget about Krishna. Krishna's too hard to deal with. I'll worship the mud. And I should get the same results, but you don't. Because the material element doesn't act as the original personality of Godhead. Because it's him, but it's only his inferior energy. It's not the whole him. It's not the whole, it's only the part. The part is not different from the whole, but it's not the whole. Okay, I have $1 million. You want you need $1 million? I'll give you $1. That's not different than my $1 million. It's part of my $1 million. I'll give you $1. So you got $1, but you still don't have the money you need. Even though I gave you, my money is my money. I have $1 million, I give you one of them. That is my money. But I didn't give you all my money, I only gave you a small piece. So it's not different, but it doesn't do the job to get only $1.
So it's like different in reciprocation, so to say.
Yeah. It's not just approach Krishna, but how you approach Krishna. With what attitude. I can approach Krishna, looking for a fight with a big club in my hand. I want someone to fight with. Where's that Vishnu? I heard he's a good fighter. So I'm approaching Vishnu with a certain attitude, and I'll get a certain reciprocation. So I'm approaching, I'm worshiping Krishna in the form of chocolate ice cream. And I live for chocolate ice cream. But I'll get a certain reciprocation from that. I won't get the same thing.
What is the proper way for a devotee to deal with the material elements?
In connection with Krishna. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhi. All those material things should be connected to Krishna through devotional service. Everything should be used in Krishna's service.
And also in the sense that...
Even the chocolate ice cream and everything else could be used in Krishna's service.
The difficulty arises sometimes is how far, when you have to endeavor for Krishna, how far is there ego if you are doing that? And how far is it then if you understand, Krishna's energy who's allowing me to do this?
It should be a balance. I'm doing this for Krishna's pleasure. I should not disappear. Vaishnavas are not supposed to write poetry without putting their name on the bottom. We shouldn't publish things anonymously. It's not Vaishnav's etiquette to publish anonymously. You should put your name on it. And in every thought, the I should be there. I'm trying to do this for Krishna's pleasure. The I is there, but that's proper use of ego. That I am Krishna's servant. I'm supposed to be Krishna's servant, and this is my attempt to function as his service. That's proper ego. Not obliterate the ego, but put it in its right place.
How do I understand the statement of Vaishnava that I have no shakti to do anything? Only when you empower me, then I can do something.
No, but the devotee who says that might be have 10,000 disciples and crores in the bank, and millions of and hundreds of ashrams, and he can say that. He can really honestly say that. I have no power, I have no assets. Only what Krishna, what my guru, only my guru's blessings. But he can be more powerful and rich and influential than everybody else.
Okay, I understand, but what is the I there?
The humble servant of my spiritual master, have been allowed to do something in his service. I might be conquering the whole world, but it's with a proper attitude, a proper understanding of who I am. Okay. All right. Now it's time to stop. We'll do another paragraph tomorrow. Maybe more than one. Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.
Leave it open because I just want to find this part that I was talking about.
Okay. It will automatically go into hibernation if you just close the lid. You don't have to push any button. Okay. And then give it back to Gordon. Actually, give it to me when you're done.